for the record, can I have your full name?
Fred McFeely Rogers.
And that's the name you were born with? When were you born?
I was born March 20th, 1928, in La Trobe, Pennsylvania, at my grandparents' house. My mother's name was Nancy McFeely Rogers, and my dad's name was James Hillis Rogers. And I was the, my mother was the only child left in her family, and so I was the only grandchild. So I was named for my grandfather, whose name was Fred McFeely. And we have a speedy delivery person on our neighborhood called Mr. McFeely. And he's pretty much named after my grandfather.
Were you close to him?
Very close. Yes, he's the kind of person who would say to you, you've made this day a special day. You know, I'm glad you're here. And it's wonderful for me to be able to pass that kind of thing on to others.
Where do you think he got that from? I mean, where did he get that?
He grew up in Pittsburgh and part of a fairly large family. And I didn't know my great-grandparents on that side, but they must have been very nurturing people.
Did you grow up in La Trobe?
I grew up in La Trobe. As a matter of fact, there's a very famous golfer in La Trobe by the name of Arnie Palmer, and his father, Deke Palmer, taught us both how to play golf, and I always say one of us did a lot more with it than the other.
Tell me about your father. What did he do?
My father started out working in a brick company that my grandfather McFeely had started. It was called the McFeely Brick Company, and they made bricks for the lining of steel furnaces, silica brick. And as time went on, I mean, Dad started out as a laborer, and as time went on, he finally bought the company. He was a wonderful man, just beloved by the town. And my mother was too. I think she had something like 25,000 volunteer hours at the hospital. She loved being a nurse's aide, and during the Second World War, she was in charge of making surgical dressings for the troops. And I remember as a little boy going down and seeing the people folding these gauze squares, you know, and then they would ship them off. She also knit sweaters for the troops. In fact, my mother, as long as I could remember, made at least one sweater every month. And at Christmas time, she had about 12 very close people to her. I mean, there was Dad and my sister and I, of course, and my grandmother. And she would give us each a hand-knit sweater every Christmas. And so until she died, those zipper sweaters that I wear on the neighborhood were all made by my mother. We would open up the boxes at Christmas and we'd all try on the sweaters, and then she would say, okay, now what kind do you want next year? Now I know what kind you want, Freddie. You want the one with the zipper up the front. So that, I think it's wonderful that you do these archival tapes, because there are ties that many people don't know just watching certain programs. And it makes the experience so much deeper to know from whence Mr. McFeely came or where the sweaters came from. And the music, you know, the music is a huge part of my work. And that was always my way of saying who I was and how I felt. In those days, you didn't speak your feelings as much as express them artistically, you know. And so I was always able to cry or laugh or say I was angry through the tips of my fingers on the piano. I would go to the piano even when I was 5 years old and start to play how I felt. And so it was very natural for me to become a composer. And having written all of the music for the neighborhood, I feel as if that's one of my gifts to children. Here is a way that doesn't hurt you or anybody else to say who you are and how you feel.
Do you remember the first time you expressed your emotions musically like that?
No, I don't. I just remember that my grandmother gave me my first piano. Before that, I had a little pump organ, and it was $25. Isn't that curious that I would remember that? But that seems like a little bit of money now. But I imagine in those days it would have been like $250 now. But that pump organ, I just made it play. And later I got a Hammond organ and started learning to play both hands and feet. But there's something very mystical and wonderful about how music can touch us. You know, it's elemental. I wonder if that's why I don't feel so close to people like Yo-Yo Ma. I mean, Yo-Yo's been on our program quite often, and he's a good friend, and I drive along, you know, in my car, and sometimes I'll put on one of his tapes that is an unaccompanied suite of Bach, and I think that this must be what heaven is like.
You said you had a sister, too.
My sister was adopted when she was 6 months old, and I was 11 years old. And her name is Elaine. And we tease her because she thinks that I must have named Lady Elaine Fairchild for her. Is she here? Is Lady Elaine here?
Oh, there she is.
Here I am, Toots. Well, did you name her for you?
Well, I don't know. Lady Elaine is the mischief maker in the neighborhood of make-believe. And she's the one who keeps everybody honest. Because she's so honest herself. My sister's a wonderful person. I am so grateful to my family for having adopted her. Because mother and dad and our grandparents are all in heaven now. And she has... First of all, she's a very fine watercolor artist. And she's also a very fine mother. And our two nephews are exceedingly special young men. One teaches music composition, of all things, at Rollins College, and the other has just gotten his doctorate in something so esoteric I can hardly understand, but it has to do with fungus. So, I mean, what a delight to be associated with that Crozier family.
Was your family religious growing up?
Were they what?
Religious.
My mother and dad were both on boards of our church. It was called the First Presbyterian Church of La Trobe. Or maybe it was the La Trobe Presbyterian Church. It was one or the other. At any rate, I remember early on being very, very taken with the kinds of things that the ministers were talking about. And I remember Dad saying something so interesting one time. He said that the church should always be a little bit in the red. That it, you know, he was a man of finance, and so he knew mentalities, and he felt that people, when they had too much overflow, that they maybe just didn't work hard enough or weren't giving what the monies were supposed to be used for, and those were, and that was to be helping those who needed it. But oh, sure, Mother and Dad took me to church school and church all the time.
What kind of hobbies did you have as a child?
What kind of
hobbies?
Hobbies?
Yeah, what did you, what interests did you? Did you go to movies, radio?
I mostly photography. I loved still photography. I had my own dark room in the basement and took the pictures, developed them, enlarged them. I still do that. I don't do the developing and enlarging part, but I still love to take pictures. I took pictures at your the latest event out in California at your place, at the Academy there. Yeah.
Production.
That was fun. But I enjoy photography. I'm not a landscape photographer. What I love to take are people. Pictures of people's faces. I've just come back from Canada, where we dedicated a building in memory of Henry Nouwen, who was one of the great spiritual writers of our day, who died suddenly a couple of years ago. And Henry was an exceedingly intelligent person, and he was a Catholic priest who taught at Menninger, taught at Harvard, taught at Yale, and finally found his home in a fairly obscure community called L'Arche, which means the Ark, in Trolley, France. And this is a community that Jean Vanier started. The way he started it was inviting two men who were severely handicapped to come and live with him. That's how it all started. There are now 113 centers throughout the world, and several thousand support groups called Faith and Light groups throughout the world. All from that man inviting two people to come and live with him. Well, Henry was a great inspiration to us, and he went to live in one of these communities in France and then moved to the one in Toronto where he was pastor for the rest of his life. These people called handicap are the core members of these groups, and these are wonderful people. During the dedication service, for instance, one young woman by the name of Ellen, she was right in the middle of doing something that had been rehearsed, and she noticed me sitting there, and she just came right over to me and gave me a hug and then went back and did the rest of the service. They help us to be who we are because they are so much themselves. And I think Henry found that. His last name is N-O-U-W-E-N, Nouwen. And I just helped with a little book called Now and Then. And it was reflections about Henry that my good friend Krista Vink collected all of these and put together. There's so much to talk about, Karen. Oh, my goodness. We free associate. But, you know, all comes from your saying, did we have a religious life in La Trobe? You bet we did. And what continues within me is the knowledge that each one of us can be used in perfectly wonderful ways. And it doesn't necessarily have to do with what the world would call great talents. You know, we have people who, in my experience, have influenced me that, for instance, I go swimming every morning. That's the first, after I have a couple hours of reading and prayer and breakfast, I go to this pool. Well, there's a man who's been there for 20 years now. 25 years, as a matter of fact, who is one of the most open people. He's very childlike. He tells me about his experiences with Mr. Hand, and Mr. Hand will just talk to me like this. You know. And we get along famously. And I look forward to my times of talking with Jeff, because just recently in the news has been another tragedy in the Kennedy family life. You say we must think about this historically as if we're looking at this for 50 years in the future. Well, the son of President Kennedy, John Jr., was killed in an airplane accident. Well, Jeff was very much invested in this, and I asked him this morning why he thought he was so interested in all of this media coverage. He said, well, I grew up with them. I was 9 years old when his daddy died. And so I said to him, well, how old were you when your dad died? 11. So I think that what I want to say about all of that is that television is an exceedingly personal medium. It reflects the story back to us. And the story that we bring to the screen, whatever we happen to be watching, we bring our own story to the screen. And so consequently, it's like a dialogue. And there are those people who sometimes say that television doesn't affect us all that much. Well, all I can say is then, why would advertisers pay so much money to put their messages on a medium that doesn't affect us all that much? I do feel that what we see and hear on the screen is part of who we become.
Let's talk about some of the things you saw early on, and movies, radio. Did any of that, were there favorites that you had growing up that influenced you?
We used to listen to a program called Vic and Sade, which had the most wonderful whimsy. I love whimsy. I think that's where the neighborhood of make-believe in our program comes from. You know, just, I've been rereading Charlotte's Web by E.B. White, and I just marvel at people who are able to use all kinds of characters to say what's on their hearts. And I love to think that that's what we do through the neighborhood of make-believe. I sit and write scripts, and sometimes the words come so fast of these characters who are talking, you know, that it's as if it's being dictated from someplace else. Now, how did I get off onto that? What did you say to me?
Oh, we were talking about Vic and Save and whimsy.
Oh, Vic and Save, yeah. Did you ever hear any of Vic and Save? Do you remember Uncle Fletcher? Uncle Fletcher lived at the Ohio Home for the Bald. I love that.
It's funny, another reference said it was Ohio Home for the Bland.
The it was Bland?
Ohio Home for the Bland. Did he have more than one?
I don't know. Well, maybe I heard it wrong. Please look that up. At any rate, I thought, whether it's the Ohio Home for the Bland or the Bald, it's very funny.
Okay, and growing up, tell me a little about your high school years. What did you want to be? Did you have any plans for the future? Growing up.
Yeah, well, I was all set to go to the seminary to become a minister and had been accepted. I don't know that that's high school, though. No, I guess that's college. My high school, I was the editor of the yearbook and wrote a great deal for the newspaper, the school newspaper. I was president of the student council in high school. But that didn't happen right off the bat. I was very, very shy when I was in grade school. And when I got to high school, I was scared to death to go to school every day. I was afraid I was going to fail. But just so happened that in our class, there was this big man on campus by the name of Jim Stumbaugh, who was on every team, the basketball team, the football team, all the teams. He was in my class, and he got hurt at a football practice, something with his kidney. And I was told to take his homework to him to the hospital. And so I went to the hospital, and he told me years later, he said, I couldn't imagine why Fred Rogers was bringing me my homework. At any rate, we started to talk. And I could see what substance there was in this jock, you know. And evidently, he could see what substance there was in this shy kid. So when he got out of the hospital and went back to the school, he said to people, you know, that Rogers kid's okay. That made all the difference in the world for me. Just somebody saying to the others, that Rogers kid's okay. It was after that I started writing for the newspaper, got to be president of the student council. You know, what a difference one person can make in the life of another. It's almost as if he said, I like you just the way you are. And for me to be able to pass that kind of acceptance on through this wonderful medium, That's been a real blessing for me. The mail that comes that tells us how we've been used in people's lives. I mean, that's not anything you can do yourself. You know, the Holy Spirit informs and sends out our simple messages. And I just had a letter the other day. Maybe Hedda told you, or David, or it came through the internet. It was from this woman who said, 14 years ago, I had a baby who was 16 months old, and I had that baby in the back seat of the car, and I was in such a terrible depression. I didn't even know that I had put him back there. And she said, I was driving along and I saw this truck coming, and I thought, I'm just going to end it all. I'm just going to go straight into the truck. And because she was desperate. And she said, I started turning to the left, and all of a sudden, I heard this little voice singing, "It's a beautiful day in this name." And she said, I veered my car to the right, and I thought of life and love, and I got some help psychologically, and now it's 14 years later, and I just need to thank you. Well, you know, to hear that your work can be used in such wonderful ways is, as I say, a great blessing.
Let's go back a little bit. What high school did you graduate from?
Latrobe High School. And the was a terrible song that we sang. The class of 46 is leaving you today. We've had a lot of jolly fun, and now we want to say, we'll always try to make you proud, we'll always sing your praises loud. So as we bid you all goodbye, thanks forever, dear Latrobe High.
Did you have any hand in writing that?
No, ma'am.
Okay, let's stop the